May it please the Court. The District Court's decision in this IRS summons case is not only unprecedented, but it's also wrong on at least four levels. It's wrong as a matter of statutory interpretation. It's wrong as a matter of deference to administrative regulations. It's wrong as a matter of taxpayer privacy. And it's wrong as a matter of administrative practicality. And I'd like to address each of these in turn.
Could I just ask you about this, please? At page 11 of the reply brief, states that third-party summonses are hardly uncommon. Just give us an idea of how common such summonses are.
Oh, there are probably thousands every year. It's any time you submit a summons to a bank for records of a taxpayer, that's a third-party summons. Going into my list, and that's, again, I think the list of importance in terms of how I would view the case, the district court has completely misread the statute. I mean, an IRS summons is issued to a person with respect, says to any person, with respect to any person. Now, sometimes that person is the same person. So if IRS issues a summons to the taxpayer himself for your books and records, that is a summons with respect to the taxpayer, and the summons is issued to the taxpayer, first-party summons. But as I mentioned, thousands of third-party summons are issued, and that's a summons to a third party with respect to the taxpayer.
I take it that Mr. Greisman himself has not yet objected to the summons.
I don't know that. The way the statute's set up, when IRS issues a third-party summons, the statute's set up so that you give notice to the taxpayer so the taxpayer can then bring his suit to deny the summons.
I'm just wondering, if he had done so, how that would affect your argument.
If he himself had objected?
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me that you could call him. He could assert his Fifth Amendment rights and the whole thing would be finished, right?
Well, that is the way we think the process should go. Certainly, if IRS were to issue a summons to a third party and the taxpayer, say, did not object, the third party could come in and say, well, I'm sorry, I don't have any records on that particular taxpayer, and that would be the end of that. But certainly any Fifth Amendment-type issues the third party would have, the third party still has that, but the third party has to come in and then give his reasons why he declines. And then, of course, that can be judged on a question-by-question or document-by-document basis. But the point is that the district court in this case didn't even get to that step. It just said, well, since there's no criminal, since IRS will not disclose whether there's a criminal referral in with respect to Mr. Greisman, the summons does not have to be complied with.
Can I just back up a second? Because I've understood the argument you were just making a minute ago to rely also in part on 7602D3 with each taxable period.
Yes.
And each tax being treated separately. So if Mr. Greisman got that summons and it didn't happen to be about any taxable period or tax that affected him, maybe it's a different year or something, that he would at least be susceptible to the summons. I guess he'd still have his Fifth Amendment rights once again.
Well, the reason that's also important is that if you could issue a taxpayer summons with respect to, say, year 2001, even if the taxpayer had been criminally referred for year 2000. So the point is, under the district court's holding, the district court, how's IRS supposed to know which taxable period or taxable event Mr. Greisman is the subject of in terms of criminal referral? That basically would say that even though there is a separate taxable period for every summons, there isn't when you're dealing with third parties. And that, of course, A, is not true, and B, it's also, as I mentioned, unprecedented because no court has ever held that. The courts that have even talked about the issue, not only no court has held that, the Supreme Court and I think the Fourth Circuit, and we cite these in our briefs, specifically say that this criminal referral prohibition refers only to the person about whom the information is sought. In this case,
it seems to me that there's something bizarre, actually, about the position of the taxpayers, because if there had been a referral, say, here of the cons, then according to their view, I guess the IRS could continue to investigate forever as long as they didn't issue any summons to the cons and they just stuck with third-party summonses. Right? Because
well,
they're saying the third-party summons should relate to whether the third party is under a referral, not whether the fundamental investigation is under a referral.
I won't speak for their position, but I think their argument is either.
So somehow it both gets swept.
Both. I mean, certainly if it's criminal referral with respect to the taxpayer, statute says you cannot issue an IRS summons. So
mm-hmm.
they say in
to
addition.
To anyone, a third party or anyone else.
That's exactly right. Right. That is exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
The other points I want to make, I think the statute's clear. And even if the statute's not clear, it's utterly surprising that the district court just dismissed the Treasury regulation that makes this crystal clear. I mean, the reg says you cannot issue a summons if a Justice Department referral is in effect, quote, with respect to that person for that liability. And, of course, the only liability that the summons is issued with respect to is the cons. And as this court is certainly well aware, that regulation is entitled to Chevron deference, and the court simply district court simply dismissed it out of hand. And again, if
the
if
district
that,
court thought that it was describing a subset somehow, didn't it? Did an
well,
example?
That, the district court reads the regulation as using the words "for example," and when the regulation is intended to do that, it uses the words "for example." There are five or six separate examples, all of which describe the separate period, separate event. None of which says that a third party's criminal referral has anything to do with whether or not you can enforce an IRS summons. The third unprecedented error is that the IRS is almost in the uncomfortable position of saying we have to protect Mr. Greisman's privacy rights because, in fact, a taxpayer is not entitled to know whether any other person in this country is under criminal referral. And Mr. Greisman is a third party, and we don't understand why the cons are entitled to know whether Mr. Greisman is under criminal referral. That's a matter between Mr. Greisman and the government, but not the cons. And that's why you have 6103, the taxpayer privacy rules. And unless you have an exception, you could not disclose that information. Now, the district court said the exception was this transactional relationship exception. And a transactional relationship exception would be something that if IRS was looking at the tax liability of a former husband and it depended on, say, alimony, well, then you could disclose what the former wife reported on her tax return because that would bear a transactional relationship to an issue in the proceeding, which is proper tax of husband. But the proceeding here is simply a summons enforcement proceeding. This is not a tax liability proceeding.
But I wondered under 6103H4C how clear that is. I mean, it just says a return or return information may be disclosed in a federal or state judicial or administrative proceeding pertaining to tax administration. And as I understand your argument, you read that as referring only to this summons enforcement proceeding. But why is it clear that it's that limited and that it couldn't mean the government's underlying investigation of the cons and their various affiliates' tax liabilities? Would it matter?
The way the statute is phrased, it says it has to bear a transactional relationship between,
right. Yeah.
But it uses the words a party to the proceeding. Now, the only proceeding here is a summons enforcement proceeding. The proceeding in my hypothetical would be a tax liability proceeding.
Well, isn't there some kind of administrative proceeding going on vis-a-vis the cons?
Yes, the cons
that's
are.
That's what I'm trying. Right.
The cons are definitely under audit.
Yeah, they are under audit. So there's an administrative proceeding pertaining to tax administration involving the cons. And then I think the way the district court looked at this is it possible that Mr. Greisman is a party, or he I guess, would be the taxpayer in this instance, since he's the third party whose return information might, or whose referral status mm-hmm. might be disclosed. And does he have a transactional relation to someone in the in the underlying proceeding,
were a tax liability case, and there was a transactional relationship between the third party and the taxpayer, then we could disclose that.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, the key point for here
you're
is
just
that
saying it's not the right kind of transactional. I mean, he was their lawyer, right? He advised them.
Well, that's what the IRS agent thinks.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is,
alleged transactional relationship.
Yes, alleged. The point of the privacy is basically Congress wanted those tax records to be private unless they really had a bearing on, you know, we don't want the wife to be overtaxed because of something the husband did. But we're not dealing with tax at this stage. IRS is just trying to get the information in order to determine whether the cons have underpaid or even overpaid their taxes. So we think the district court got the Privacy Act aspect wrong. And another problem is that the district court's decision really does create enormous administrative burdens for the Internal Revenue Service. I mean, the normal criminal referral process, which says, and we contend, pertains only to the taxpayer under investigation, obviously, the auditing agents know whether they have referred the cons for criminal prosecution, and the affidavit says they have not. But how is an IRS agent investigating taxpayer A supposed to know whether witness B is under criminal referral? The only way an IRS agent is going to know that is for an IRS agent to have knowledge of every criminal referral for every person in the United States. And certainly Congress didn't have in mind when it enacted the privacy provisions that IRS agents could know whether every other person who's a third-party witness is under criminal prosecution.
Are there actual formal agency safeguards or measures that would preclude them from knowing this?
Yes, an IRS agent is not allowed, unless he has a reason to know, is not allowed to know whether XYZ is under criminal investigation. There have been IRS agents who have been dismissed for snooping and things of that sort. You're not allowed to do that. And that's partly because of Section 6103. IRS takes that very seriously. In short, there's simply neither legal or logical force to the district court's unprecedented holding. And we think that should be reversed. I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
All right. Very good, Mr. Rothenberg. Mr. Archie?
May it please the Court. Your question, Judge Rogner, went to the frequency of things. Strikes the very point that the government makes. They say to you that it's unprecedented. Why is it unprecedented? There is not one case in the first 25 years of this statute. The statute was adopted in 1982. Not one case the government can identify where the government has ever issued a summons to a witness who's been the subject of a referral. Not one case in 25 years. It is unprecedented for that reason.
Why would there be such a case if, as the government argues, the referral status of third-party recipients of summonses is irrelevant? Maybe that's been just so well understood that nothing's come up.
It is so well understood because, the phrase any person has always meant to the government and to people outside who would be free to bring the claim to mean any person.
How do you know that? I mean, I guess I have a problem with your argument in the sense that it seems to me, at a minimum, the government has presented a reasonable interpretation of this. And either the language is plain in the way that Mr. Rothenberg has argued that, or perhaps it's ambiguous, which then takes you into the Chevron analysis, and one would look at their regulations.
I would ask you to reconsider for these reasons. If we look at the specific language of the controlling statute, It says that the question here is a Justice Department referral is in effect with respect to any person. So
well, it says actually is in effect with respect to such person. And, I mean, you've got all of this with respect to any person, a referral in effect with respect to such person. And so we have to decide whether with respect to just means to. We have to decide whether with respect to sometimes means to and sometimes means about. We have to think about what this language means.
I think if you look at the statute, just this statute, or
and
the statute as a whole.
And how about looking at the statute as a whole with all of its sections, including the sections about restricting things to one particular tax year, one particular
right.
type of tax, a business tax perhaps, a personal tax, a FICA tax?
Precisely. But if we'll, let's start with D1, which is the controlling clause. It says, no summons may be issued under this title, and the Secretary may not begin any action under Section 7604. I want to come back to 7604 in a minute. To enforce any summons with respect to any person.
With respect to
yeah,
any
right,
person
going,
is
I'm,
the way
I'm
the
going,
government
I'm
would
going to get
it.
To that. If a Justice Department referral is in effect with respect to such person.
And so what does it mean when we say with respect to any person? The summons, the government has argued here, is with respect to the cons. That's the point of the investigation. That's why they're collecting the information.
We know that Congress could have said with respect to the taxpayer upon whom the tax is imposed, because that is precisely what the Congress
well,
said
don't
in,
always,
in C2.
They don't
here,
always draft that way.
Well, here they chose a different clause. And we know that it's a different clause because at the very start of this statute, 7602A2, Congress identifies three categories of people, the taxpayer or its officers and employees.
No, I understand that argument. You spell that out in your brief. But I want to come back still to enforce any summons. You're reading that essentially to say to enforce any summons to any person if – you want to just delete the words with respect the first time they happen, but not
no,
the second time.
Absolutely not. We say that only the phrase with respect
any
to
any summons to any person, if a Justice Department referral is in effect with respect to that person. That's the way you're reading this.
No, I think we must have given you a false impression in our brief.
In what you're saying right now, you're giving me a false impression.
Well, let me make it clear once and for all. When Congress said with respect to any person, only the phrase with respect to captures both the witness and the taxpayer. Two wouldn't work. Two just would not work. Two would pick only the person who received the summons and exclude the subject of the examination. With respect to captures both. So
but
the universal
summons isn't about – no, I just don't – I think that's a very forced reading of this statute, to enforce any summons with respect to any person. I don't see how – I see where you're going now with your both
right.
and approach, but I think it's a tough way to read this.
There's another point of reference, Judge, what I'd like to offer you. You know, the statutory language refers to Section 7604.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we look at over to 7604, it doesn't use the phrase that C2 does with respect to the tax, the person upon whom the tax is imposed. It uses twice the phrase any person. We know that here we're talking about different categories of people. 7604 twice refers to any person in a complementary way to its reference here to any person. You know, you pointed out you'd focus upon kind of the starting point from we're conscious of the starting point in our brief, that the statute starts out by identifying three subsets and then later refers to any person. Under this court's ruling in water quality, there can be little doubt, but that's a conscious distinction. Yes, sir.
Mr. Archer, let me see if I can track where I thought you were going with respect to any person, meaning it encompassed both people.
Yes.
Well, then, as the sentence continues, though, with respect to such person, so what happens to the two when we get to the end of the sentence? I mean,
well,
such person's got to be one person, right, not two people.
Perfectly confident. We just finished referring to any person.
Right.
And then we're talking about whether there's a referral in effect with respect to that person. Such person refers to any person. Whoever is the person that's the subject of the referral, there can be no enforcement of the summons by the government. And should be no. I mean,
I don't understand why you would say any summons with respect to a person if what you're interested in from the person is information about somebody else. That's not really with respect to you. You're being asked to tell what you know about another person.
Well, it's with respect. They're asking you about your questions, let me focus this as precisely as I can. The question here is that the district court asked the government to tender for in-camera review, under seal, an affidavit saying, is this individual who is the witness the subject of a referral, referral relating to this liability that's under examination? Do we have a referral of the county firm with respect to aiding and abetting somehow, with respect to its clients or something of that sort?
But the government, of course, first of all, has a lot at stake here because they will have to probably change their privacy regulations within the Internal Revenue Service. They also will have to change the way that they handle claims of privilege. The district court has this kind of little offhand comment about Fifth Amendment privilege, but we know very well that you've got to show up and invoke your privilege. You can't just generically say, well, I'm not showing at all because I'm making a generic claim of privilege. I don't think the in-camera offer helps or it doesn't really hurt your case very much either, but it's just kind of an aside.
Well, there are 2 points raised here, if I might just comment briefly. One, on the disclosure aspect, for 25 years it was never a problem.
You don't know that.
I mean,
maybe
it
didn't come up.
Well, that's because has never been raised, that nobody has ever felt the need to raise that objection.
Right, so third-party witnesses were showing up and they were testifying and the IRS wasn't having to reveal they're referrals.
And you also know under the clear reading of the 6103 provisions that it specifically addresses a circumstance of this sort. It allows, if you get to that point, a transactional relationship disclosure. You never get to this point because the government, if the court will confirm that the construction that applied, I submit to you for 25 years of the government, is still the right construction, the government never issues the summons where the person targeted has been referred. And the government knows knows.
What evidence do you have that this is the first time the government has issued a summons to a third-party witness who perhaps was under a referral?
Two points. One, there are 300 million people in this country. There are 100 million returns. There are summonses issued. The law books are full of them. Not one of them. Look at all those cases. See if you find a single circumstance in which a summons has been issued to a person who has been referred, a witness who's been referred.
Well,
in all my life, I've never seen it.
Right. It just tells me that it hasn't been litigated and you don't find it in the cases. It doesn't really tell me what's been happening.
Help me out with this.
Yes, Your Honor.
Assume that the IRS issues a summons to a tax preparer regarding a taxpayer's return. And assume that the tax preparer had been referred to the Justice Department because he hadn't declared all of his income earned from preparing tax returns. Is it your view that the IRS could not issue the summons even to get him to talk about the taxpayer?
Absolutely not. They clearly can issue that summons, and it doesn't fall into this provision because the subject of the preparer's problem is not the work he did on the return that's under examination. If there's a this goes to the separate liability or taxable event. If the return preparer, to twist the hypothetical just a touch, Judge Rogner, if the return preparer was referred to the Department of Justice for falsifying the taxpayer's return that's been that's under examination, absolutely. You don't want the government issuing summons to that guy to get him to talk about something that he's been referred to the Department of Justice. In fact, it's kind of a Miranda problem. He's saying, we're going to issue you a summons, and we haven't told you you're referred, but we know you're referred, and we're going to get you to talk about what you were referred for.
Did Mr. Kahn direct Revenue Agent Weinger to ask BDO Seidman for answers to the questions he himself could not answer?
Mr. Kahn said there are things that he knows about and things that BDO Seidman would know about. Yes, absolutely.
So if that's the case, how can you argue that the IRS had all the information it sought in the summons in its possession?
Well, there are two points. One, the IRS had by published pronouncements that we identified in our brief has already said we've reached our conclusion, we're going to disallow all the losses in question, we're going to assert the penalties regardless of what the facts are. There are some facts, clearly, that BDO Seidman would have. I think we have reason to believe the government's got all those facts from its examination of BDO Seidman. There's a separate examination going on of BDO Seidman. But Mr. Kahn could not vouch for the immaterial facts that were beyond the scope of his personal knowledge. I mean, but they're immaterial. They're absolutely immaterial.
How do we know they're immaterial? Just by Mr. Kahn's word?
No. If we ask for discovery of the agent on this point to see what the scope of the examination was and also to ask about whether or not there'd been a referral, the government indicated, in fact, I think they indicated in the summons, that nothing we said in Mr. Kahn's summons is going to alter the government's conclusion. That's in the transcript. It's outside this record. It's in another record. That point was never submitted by the government. And then it was there, but it was never a point submitted by the government at all.
What's the circumstantial evidence that you claim to have that Mr. Griesman was referred to the Justice Department for his promotion of these tax shelters? Has Mr. Griesman objected or asked to intervene here?
Well, there are a couple points. One, there have been articles in the newspaper, which we tendered part of the record in this case, suggesting that there have been referrals of related case. Two, we asked the government, and we got no answer. Three, we contacted counsel for Mr. Griesman, who offered to make a disclosure under seal to the district court judge, and the government would not consent to that. And so we say that, look, the statutory language.
Why did the government need to consent to some disclosure that Mr. Griesman wanted
seal
to make?
They had to consent to whether it being under seal.
Okay.
And so, he did not want to put this in the public domain.
But you say it's already been in the public domain in the newspapers.
Well, they're generalized newspaper articles. Only the government knows, and I will tell you, the agent who issued this summons knows that there's been a referral. If given the discovery, I can prove that. The agent, the people working these cases are the ones who are driving that examination and that referral. And so Mr. Kahn, I cannot speak to things beyond my personal knowledge, but they know, and that's why the statute says, government, you know who's been referred, and they know well who's been referred. If you know you've referred the witness, do not go out there and try to get the witness to talk without by way of summons, which goes to your Fifth Amendment point, is as a general proposition to assert the Fifth Amendment, you have to show up and answer the specific questions. This statute overrides that, and if you look at the history of LaSalle, it overrides it. Let's take it, start with the taxpayer. Undeniably, the taxpayer doesn't have to show up because he doesn't get the summons. There can be no enforcement of the summons. He doesn't have to show up and claim. Whoever any person is does not show up under the clear language of the statute.
Can you give me some reason why the district court didn't even mention Chevron?
No need to mention Chevron. I mean, in a sense, the first commandment of Chevron controls here. That's our case in a nutshell. Where the language is clear, any person means any person, no further inquiry is appropriate. That's precisely what this court said in Mortar Quality.
So we just spent the first 30 minutes talking about whether any summons with respect to any person with a referral in effect with respect to such person. We've spent a lot of time talking about what that means. So it's a little tough to see that it's that clear for step one of Chevron.
A, we say is that clear, and B,
no,
we say if one stands the regulation next to the statute, you see the regulation had to state in other words, had to alter the words, change the words, and add words. Water Quality says that's not appropriate. Chevron Commandment number one says that's not appropriate. We say it's abundantly clear. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Audrey. Mr. Rothenberg.
Well, I think I've made most of the points I need to make. The question about what newspaper articles, whatever, I don't know whether Mr. Greisman's under criminal referral. I'm not. My position in the Department of Justice, I'm not in a need to know that. So I don't even know whether Mr. Greisman's under criminal, has been referred to criminally. So I don't understand where he says, well, everybody seems to know. Gee, I don't know. And the only other point I want to make is that we talked a little bit about Chevron. Well, if regulations never said anything other than the statute, then we wouldn't have to read a whole lot of regulations. Not every statute is, even though we think this statute is crystal clear, only if you think there's any ambiguity in it, then you look and see what the regulations say. Unless there are any other questions.
Apparently not. Thank you, Mr. Rothenberg. Thanks to all counsel. The case is